Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
What's up? Welcome back. Episode 248 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast right here, ready to go. Great guests lined up. Before we get into that, though, thank you so much to the patrons for supporting the show. Because of you, the show goes on, and I'm able to do what I do here, which is bring on great guests to talk about Magic and their experience and bridge the gap between where they are and where you are. And, of course, as a thank you each and every month, we do a patron-exclusive giveaway. And that, of course, is coming up here pretty soon. Today is the end of the month if you're listening to this live. Happy Halloween to everybody who celebrates that. It's going to be a fun time here, you know, going out with the kids and doing the whole stereotypical costume, candy, that whole jazz. It's going to be a lot of fun. Maybe you have some Halloween plans as well that you're tying in with Magic. That'd be kind of fun. Great opportunity to dress up as your favorite planeswalker, right? I mean, why not? Anyways, I do want to say thank you again to the patrons. And if you are interested in becoming a patron, if you found any value in the show and want to give back in some way, shape, or form, there's several ways you can do that, one of which is becoming a patron, and that's over at mtgprotutor.com/Patreon. You can sign up there by pledging any amount you want per episode, setting a monthly limit so you never go out of budget, and then as a thank you, you will be considered in every single drawing moving forward where we send out some sweet Magic swag. And by we, I mean me and Paragon City Games, who provides all the prize support for the patrons as well as for the Sealed League. So thank you to them. You can check them out at ParagonCityGames.com. They are a great community resource. Their motto is "Where Heroes Play," and I love that because they really do make every person who comes and interacts with their brand feel like a hero. So great store. I'm very proud to be associated with them. So check them out for sure. Now, to wrap up last weekend, oh my gosh, we had 3 Grand Prix last weekend. And just taking a look here over in, Phoenix, we had Sean Miller, congratulations, who took down GP Phoenix. And I see some past guests of the show here in the top 8 as well. Reed Duke, Jacob Negro, been a while since we had him on. And just some other great players that I really want to get on the show. It'll be really fun to find where they're at and invite them here on the show. So congrats to everybody who went there, and especially to the top 8 for sure. Now, clicking over here to Hong Kong, which kind of snuck under my radar, I guess. A huge congratulations to Sato Rai, who took it down. And I see past guest Li Shitian, who made top 8 as well. So that's pretty cool. What's kind of fun about GP Liverpool is all 8 players in the top 8 are new faces. Like, none of them have been on the show. So that's really fun for me. I love when that happens. I'm able to reach out to a whole new group of players and bring them on and see what they did and how they did it and all that good stuff. So, congrats to Mark Purvis, who took down GP Liverpool, and I look forward to reaching out to all these top 8 players and bringing them on the show and hearing about their stories. So, congrats, congrats, congrats. And, of course, we have the Pro Tour this weekend. How cool is that? Pro Tour Albuquerque finally here, the first time that they are experimenting with putting the Pro Tour several weeks after the release of the set. So, after Ixalan came out, normally you'd have the Pro Tour, you know, 2 weeks or so after the release. But now, it's been like 5 or 6 weeks. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see what the pros end up doing with the knowledge that is now common and if they roll with that or if they do something new. So I'm really excited. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me today. We have a great guest lined up. And without further ado, I can't wait to bridge the gap between you and him and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a returning guest to the show with 2 Grand Prix top 8s and is a gold level pro. He is originally from the Netherlands, but is coming to us from England. Prodigies near and far. Let's welcome back the 2017 English team captain, Niels Molle. Niels, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Sean. How are you?
Fantastic. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah, definitely am.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Niels, you can do so on Twitter. He's at Niels Molle, pretty easy to find. And if you heard, I said he's coming back to the show. He was actually back on episode 116 in July of 2016. And so here we are about a year and 4 months later, and we're going to be catching up and seeing how things are going because he's had a great season and, you know, English team captain, all that good stuff. So, man, we are super excited. So, Niels, what have you been up to this past year and 4 months or so? You do a Magic full time? I'm still working. What do you have going on?
No, I played definitely more Magic on a weekly basis than I normally have. I am still full-time employed. I work as an IT consultant at an American firm. Apart from that, just playing loads of my free time, playing Magic, trying to improve myself, work on my weaknesses, and see if I can continue the good flow that I've been in.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. So a lot more magic. In what regards? Are you doing magic online? You do a lot of paper. So what does more magic look like for you?
Yeah, I've always played a lot of magic online, especially since I started delving more in the competitive scene, because it's just so time efficient. Mm-hmm. You don't have to arrange getting people over. You can just jam games.
Yeah.
So especially loads of magic online, but also loads actually of GPs. Last year, I think I did a total of like 11 GPs over the course of the year.
Wow.
Maybe more, but I played loads of GPs.
Excellent. So yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about your journey to gold level pro. Like what's that look like? So you said a lot of GPs and whatnot, but kind of tell us some of the milestones along the way that has gotten you up to that point.
Okay, because I think the last time that we talked was just before Pro Tour Eldritch Moon. So I was qualified for that Pro Tour. That was the last of the 2015-2016 season. And because I just then top eight at the GP, I also was qualified for Kaladesh, Pro Tour Kaladesh in Honolulu. So first of all, I was very short of locking silver because the Pro Tour didn't go well for me. I did play the same 75 cards as Lucas Bloon did, but where I went, I lost all my games. I'm not such a master as Lucas. Lucas won that Pro Tour, so it wasn't a great deck, but he managed to pull it off.
Huh. Now that's interesting right there. You know, playing the same deck as someone who did much better, in this case, winning. how does that happen, you know, sometimes? Like, what's up with that?
Well, back then, the team, so-called cabin crew from across Europe, was still together. And I prepared for that Pro Tour with them. Eventually, we were split on a couple decks. But we like to play mid-range decks in general. So when Lucas was working on the black-white deck, and liked it, and Martin Busa also played a deck at that same event, I thought, these guys have so much more experience than I do, I'll just follow them. But we didn't see the power of Emrakul coming. We got a little bit, people were going over the top of us.
Hmm. Interesting. Wow, okay. So that Pro Tour didn't go so well for you. So what happened next?
Well, I just lost silver, or I just missed silver. So I was like, okay, I'm qualified for one more Pro Tour. I can do two things. I can just like work super hard and try to make most of the season, or take it a little bit easier on Magic. Well, my first idea was to take it a little bit easier on Magic. So I just prepared with a small group of people. So I had to take less days off. So just with the four of us. And I managed to go 10-6 at that Pro Tour. Putting me on 8 pro points for the season, because the first GP of the season, I went 11-5. And then I was in a situation like, okay, 8 points with still a whole season ahead of me. Maybe it's worth to see if I can hit silver this year, because bronze didn't exist at the time.
Okay.
So my idea from slowing down, like, went immediately back to pushing it up a notch. So I booked a couple of GPs, especially with a lot of support from my girlfriend as well, who said, like, just go for it if you want to. And I ended up second at GP Caraco, like a month and a half, I think, after the Pro Tour. So that put me up with another 6 points. Nice. And qualified for another Pro Tour.
Excellent.
And then my season started looking completely different than I anticipated for at the beginning of the year.
What did you play at Caraco?
At Caraco, I played green-black with Ishkina, and then Emrakul was still not banned, so you could traverse the Uven World for an Emrakul.
Good choice.
Yeah, it went, I thought it was a good deck for the tournament, and I think it was a deck that ended up second to GP, both the GP the weekend before. I changed only one or two cards.
Okay.
I liked the deck very much, won a lot of Magic Online, and that paid off. It also worked well in the tournament itself.
Excellent. So you picked a deck that was doing well, tweaked it just barely slightly, and piloted it to great success all the way up to second. So that's really neat.
Yeah, thank you. I was very stoked, especially with the second GP top eight, because it put me in such a good spot for the rest of the season.
And how did you decide, just because that deck did well, you figured it was still well positioned?
Yeah, it was a green-black deck. I just sleeved it up just to see the week before, actually. Played with it. It did very well. Then Seth Manfield, I think, was the deck list that I took, saw during the weekend. I picked that deck, kept playing with it, and I think I won like four leagues in a row or something on Magic Online. So I was like, yeah, this deck is solid. I'll sleeve this up.
This is it. Excellent. All right, so now you're sitting on 14 points and another Pro Tour invite. So keep going. So what happened next?
Yeah, so then I had to make or get 3 points from GPs, or I needed to go another 10-6 at the next Pro Tour to lock my silver, and then I have a silver fight for the Pro Tour after that. So the week before the Pro Tour, we tested loads of limit, or a couple weeks before, we did a draft camp with a lot of the Dutch and Belgian guys, and the GP itself went quite well, going 11-4 again, X4.
Nice.
Luckily, 2 pro points, only being 1 pro point short now to lock silver. And so that means that I had to go 9-7 on the Pro Tour. And I managed to go 10-6, lose the last round to Yui to immediately get me another Pro Tour slot. But I was sad for losing that round, but also happy that I managed to at least lock silver for that season. So yeah, going away from the Pro Tour, I felt pretty good.
Excellent. Oh, my goodness. So, okay, yeah. So then what happened next?
Well, as a silver player, like now bronze, you're immediately qualified for the RPDQs. So there was an RPDQ, I think, 5 weeks later. I prepared for the Pro Tour, for that RPDQ, especially with loads of the team that I joined earlier last year. That was the team Axion from the UK. Prepared a lot with them. They were really high on Mardu. So I got a list from them, worked with that. I think I wanted to play a second Sky Sovereign, play slightly different than them, and top 4 at RPDQ. Hmm. So that means that I could divert my silver and fight to the last Pro Tour of the season. So I would then be immediately qualified for all Pro Tours from that season onwards.
Perfect.
Or from that Pro Tour for the rest of the season.
Right. Excellent.
So going then into the next Pro Tour, knowing that I was already qualified for the next one, tried to get a good finish. Well, that Pro Tour did not go so well. Mm. We built a Marvel deck, but we played only 2 Ulamogs because we didn't want to play so many 10 drops that we were so hard to cast. Now, playing loads of mirrors, and where my opponent had 4 Ulamogs, that did not end up well. As well for me, that Pro Tour. Because like you can chain that many Ishkenaz, but you can't beat the power of the Ulamog. So that Pro Tour, I think I ended up 6-8 in total, because I did win my limited runs.
Okay.
So then I had one more slot the last Pro Tour of the season. And there I needed to go 11-5, not going 11-5 beforehand. I thought it would be quite a tough spot. I worked really hard that week. I jammed like loads of games from like 10 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the night.
Oh, wow.
but it paid off, and I managed to go 11-5, locking me gold. And then with a couple more points that I picked up from some GPs, also got me on 37 points, which was enough for team captain for England. After Kyoto, I felt my season worked out perfectly. But there were definitely some stressful moments during the season where I go like, oh, I need to have this finish, or I need to have that finish.
Yeah. Wow, what a season. So what happened? So, you know, so what was the difference? How did you start doing so well, do you feel? Because, you know, you started off by saying, oh, you know, the Pro Tour didn't go so well, and my choice was to kind of cool it on Magic or not, and you decided to cool it a little bit, but then you just started doing well, you know, doing a good finish after one after the other. How did that happen? Like, were you getting more out of your practice? Were you, like, trying harder? Like, what happened that you feel that really kind of took off?
Well, I definitely learned a lot playing loads of Pro Tours last season. Mm-hmm. Just testing with another group of dedicated people in a house for a whole week. You just pick up so much like knowledge, just also how to evaluate certain things or game situation or game plans. You just learn so much every time. So I think that definitely improved. But also like with I think with everybody who plays competitive Magic will tell you this, that variance is a thing. Sometimes you can't win a single match for weeks, and another tournament you just spike suddenly and it just pays off. So playing a large number of tournaments that set you up for the best possible outcome.
Excellent. So obviously, just like you said, being there, interacting and in that environment, you just kind of soak in, you know, some knowledge, and you're able to just improve maybe in some ways that you don't see until, you know, a year later when you're team captain, you look back. But is there anything specific that stands out, like the biggest thing that you learned this past year?
It's a tough question because it's a lot of small things that, mm-hmm. that of course, make you improve. I think the thing that improved most is my limited game.
Okay.
And then especially during the draft itself, like how to keep myself open for as long as possible, or when to move into a certain color. So it's more the feeling from the draft itself, especially having done a couple draft camps now with people for just jamming drafts for a whole weekend.
Nice.
I think that is the thing that improved most for me and definitely paid off with the Pro Tours as well.
So your limited game has improved the most, and that's just the feeling of the draft and how it's going and staying open, you said, for longer than you used to, has really paid off?
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Neat. And that's just, again, one of those cool things that you pick up by being around, you know, other high-level players and being able to play with them for, like you said, just being in the house for many days on end and just practicing.
Exactly. Maybe it's a funny story. We were drafting, preparing for Pro Tour Eldersmoon with the cabin crew. And Impact 3, which was, it was Eldersmoon, Shadows of Innistrad. And in Impact 3, one player, he opened an Efficin. His Efficin went all the way around the table, ended up in player number 8 deck, because nobody wanted to take that pick away, because everybody knows the chance that you play somebody else in that pot are, let's say, around 40%. I don't know the exact math, but it's not certain that you will have to play against that Efficin. But I know that even if it's not rare drafting, and I would be drafting at, let's say, a PPDQ top 8, that Efficin would have never been shipped to the 8-player deck, because somebody would have picked it up somewhere, thinking like, oh, I definitely don't want to play against the Efficin.
Holy moly, it went all the way to the 8th player?
Yeah.
Wow. Was she just not good in limited?
No. It was like we were all prepared for the Pro Tour, so everybody was a decent drafter. Just nobody wants to hate pick the cards. Everybody wants the card to improve their own deck. Because everybody is aiming for a 2-1 draft and hopefully going 3-0. So everybody took another card, and eventually the 8th player ended up with the Efficin. I don't even think that he won the draft. I'm not sure, but I don't think so.
That is an incredible story. Yeah, because like you said, at any other event, she would have got gobbled up super fast. So.
Yes, definitely.
Interesting. Oh, man. So where has been your, like, the best place that you traveled? So, you know, with the GPs and the Pro Tours and whatnot, where's been your most fun location to visit?
Yeah, I think everybody will tell you the same. Hawaii. Hawaii is beautiful.
Yeah? Excellent.
And even like we were just prepared for that Pro Tour with the four of us. We had a small apartment looking out over Waikiki Beach. And after a full day of testing, just opening a beer on the balcony, looking out like on the beautiful ocean there. I mean, when you live in rainy England, you know how to appreciate that.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, that's a lot of fun. So you enjoyed Hawaii the most. It's pretty neat. And did you participate in the English Nationals?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So did you have the most points going into that?
Yeah. I was already locked for team captain.
Okay, locked for team captain. So I didn't realize that the team captain can, or the player with the most points can still participate in nationals. So obviously you can, so that's good.
Yeah.
And do you just get more pro points? Does nationals give you pro points?
Yeah, top 4 get pro points.
Okay.
The number 3 or 4 get 1 point, and the winner gets 3. Okay. And the second place get 2 points.
So not a lot, but still, you get some. So 3, 2, 1, 1. Great. So, did you go just to go? I mean, because if you're already locked in for Might as well participate, but tell us about that experience about going to nationals.
Yeah, there are some pro points on the line, of course. So it's like, even though the English nationals are around 400 people, so it's quite, they're quite big events, but there are some pro points on the line. The nationals was the TO was my sponsor, Axel Now, the shop. So they really thought it would be good that everybody from Team Axel Now would be there as well.
Yeah.
And everybody being excited for the new nationals, that was not very hard to convince us.
No, not at all.
So out of the 12 players in the team, I think 11 eventually went, because one person had other responsibilities, but 11 of us went. And yeah, of course, preparing just with everybody for nationals brings back old memories from years ago. So it was great.
So you played nationals back when they had nationals before?
Yeah.
Was it any different now than it was back then?
Yeah, back then it was a more important tournament for myself.
Okay.
How I looked at it, especially now already being qualified for the World Magic Cup. That was not on the line for me. Back then, like I was talking, I think it was like 2008, 2009, 2010, those years. Yeah, back then for me, it was a shock to qualify myself. And also as then somebody who was relatively new to the competitive scene, it was just great to see all those great like players, then the best players in your country. Back then it was the Netherlands for me. Mm-hmm. Where now I'm sitting then, let's say, in a different seat. So, but still, the playing the nationals was a great experience. It was very well hosted ours. We were one of the three highlighted ones from Wizards. So we had coverage on the Wizards account. So the coverage was done very very well and very professionally.
Nice.
So it was just a great experience whatsoever playing nationals.
Yeah. So somebody else said that it was very well run. The TOs are really like known for putting on good events.
Yeah. They normally have Modern for Goodies, it's called. And these are modern tournaments that attract, I think, between 100 and 200 players here in England. Everybody who wins normally gets like loads of fetches or foil fetches, expeditions, or get boxes. Everybody who goes top eight, and there's always loads of boosters.
Nice.
Sorry, I said boxes for top eight. I mean crates. They give away crates of booster boxes.
Nice. So, that's good stuff. Yeah. So what did you play for nationals?
I played Mortal Vehicles with Tatnots here, the list that Metsavira did well with the GP before that.
And obviously, how did it feel like? Tell us some of the highlights of nationals. Did that work for you? Let's go into that.
Yeah, the deck worked great. Maybe a little bit similar story as the GP. I played a couple games with most of my team. Was on a different deck. They were all on Teamer Energy. And I didn't feel like playing Teamer Mirrors the whole day. So I picked up the Marty Vehicle list, and I felt that it had a good plan against Teamer. So I picked it up, and I went undefeated with it during the Swiss, IDing the last round.
Perfect.
So yeah, the deck itself, I can't complain about it.
Nice. And what does it mean to be the English team captain? So what are you gonna do with that? I know that obviously your teammates are decided, so how are you gonna prepare? So let's dive into that. You know, leading up to the World Magic Cup as a team captain, what does it look like?
Well, like right now, we're trying to settle things, how to best prepare for it, because there's a team GP the weekend before that I will be attending. Then after that, a lot of the Scots as well, they want to stay there. My teammates probably want to stay there, and then we want to start preparing that week, especially with the unified standard that might need to have a look in with my team to see how we can best approach that. And we all have our strengths and weaknesses as a player. So we try to see, of course, if we can adjust the deck choice and all to the flavor of the liking of each and all of us. Also, Team Sealed is pretty interesting. But this is just something that's very hard to practice if you're not sitting together. I mean, you can't do it on Magic Online. So like if you live, because we all live like at least an hour and a half away. For Americans, this sounds very close by, but here in Europe, you think a little bit different about distances. to get all together and prepare for Team Sealed already was pretty tough. So I think we're just going to get together the week before in Nice and prepare that week for that event.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so that is a challenge, you know, the Team Sealed, and that's tough to do. And so it's just that's going to come down to the week before. That's when that portion is going to be practiced for.
Yeah, because like most standard decks, I'll play a couple of GPs in the States after the upcoming Pro Tour. And those are mainly standard as well. And since there are no new sets are being added to standard between the two tournaments, to see what decks align. I mean, like, you can only run four harness lighting in one deck max. So you can't play, let's say, Teamer Energy and Pummeler. Those two decks don't go together.
Yeah.
Which decks can go well together? Of course, this standard is only five sets, so probably you will just want to be playing the most powerful cards. But this is something that will come to when we'll be testing. But we'll see how that goes.
Excellent. So, what are the strengths and weaknesses of you and your teammates? Have you guys figured out where each player shines and what each player needs to work on?
Not yet. I know my own weaknesses. Mm-hmm. For my teammates, I knew Autumn already from PPDQs earlier, etc. Mm-hmm. But for Ross, he's relatively new to the competitive scene, so I don't know that much about his strengths or weaknesses. But I think if we all just let the others be, it's something that they feel comfortable with. And of course, try to guide each other as good as possible. Mm-hmm. I think we can come to a very workable agreement and see how things shape up.
So, since it's unified standard, right? Like you were saying, leading up to it, everyone's just jamming standard on their own, which they can do and whatnot. And then do you come together and everyone say, "Hey, here's the deck I like," and everyone kind of picks one. And then if there's an overlap, then you say, "Okay, well now I have to figure it out." Or how are you guys going to end up deciding on that?
I think beforehand, maybe the week before, I would just take all stock list from a website, put them in a spreadsheet, see what cards overlap from each other. Mm-hmm. If Frank Carson didn't already put the article up, because then I don't have to do it myself.
Nice.
But then and then you see like, okay, what do we think is the best lineup to approach the meta game? Because I can now already guarantee you that almost all the teams will have at least one teamer player mm-hmm. among them, the three of them. So we'll just have to see what we think is a good approach going into the format.
Excellent. Now the War Magic Cup is it in December?
Yeah. It's the first weekend of December. I think it's like first, second, and third of December.
Okay, so like 6 or 5 weeks or so from this recording, and it's the sets that we have right now, right? It's the Ixalan standard.
Yes.
Yep, like you said.
Yeah. It will be the last primer event before the new set. Rivals of Ixalan is released, I think, in January.
Excellent. So, things could shift and change in the next couple of weeks, especially with the Pro Tour coming out. But what's working in standard now? Like, what do you see? How are things going? What are your thoughts on standard?
Right now, I think there are definitely a lot of viable strategies, but there are of course a couple of just literally tier one decks. I think the biggest elephant in the room is Teamer Energy.
Okay.
The deck just plays the most powerful cards, which is very good. Now, right now, you see quite some Mortal Vehicle lists popping up doing quite well as well, because cards like Heart of Kirin, and Analyze Disintegrations are still such powerful cards.
Yeah.
And then a couple other decks. There's loads of different decks. I think right now we were speaking a week and a half, I think, before the recording. Blue Black Control has fallen off a little bit off the radar. So I will just go now into the next Pro Tour 3-4 weeks or 3 weeks from now.
Yes.
2 weeks almost.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll just have to see how the format has shaped up at that moment to see what deck I will play. I'll probably play, before that, I'll try to get familiar with at least two or three strategies that I might play. And then settle like a Tuesday before the Pro Tour, set on the deck and just keep working on the sideboard and the last couple slots in the deck list.
So I'm really excited to, you know, for the Pro Tour and then to talk to people about it, you know, afterwards. But here we are right on the front end. I want to get your perspective. What are your thoughts on having the Pro Tour so much further after the release? So, you know, you've been to a bunch of Pro Tours, you know, this season, and they were normally, you know, 2 weeks right after the release. And now here's one that is, you know, different than that. What are your initial thoughts on, you know, this big old gap between release of the set and the Pro Tour?
I personally don't like it.
Okay.
And most people I talk to who are qualified for this Pro Tour don't like it either.
Why is that?
Because one of the nicest things for playing the Pro Tour is maybe not playing the Pro Tour itself, at least for me, I speak out of myself, is mainly the preparation together with the rest of the team, try to discover this new format, discover this new draft format, standard format, work on that and see if you can actually, let's say, break the format. Mm-hmm. Well, it rarely happens. I don't think it happened since Callblade, but it's just nice that you can work on that standard format when it's still brand new. And especially now when the standard format is shaken up so much by four sets leaving and one new set coming in.
Yeah,
it's just like not having that option to see like, okay, we expect a lot of teamwork, but we have, let's say, this deck that loses against mono red, but it's very good against teamer. We think most people will play teamer, will play this. Now the format is much more settled. So it's much more like almost like playing a high stakes GP in a sense. Of course, the skill level is much higher.
Yeah.
But then playing a pro tour.
Huh. Okay. Wow. That's a good point and good perspective. Like I said, I'm also interested after the Pro Tour to see how it goes. Cause we all want to know, hey, what's going to come out of the Pro Tour? Is it going to be new decks? Is it going to be more of the same? And so it'll be very interesting to see, you know, what happens if the format is, you know, already settled or if, you know, you and all the other teams can, you know, something else comes out of it, you know, figure something else out. So it's going to be fun. Very fun. So
I would not be surprised if one new deck at least.
Did you think so? Okay. So one new deck
comes out. Maybe not a whole new deck, but maybe a different view on a certain archetype.
Yeah.
Certain deck type. Yeah, that could be.
So what are your thoughts on Ixalan in Standard? Have the tribes played anything, you know, played a part at all in Standard? Is that mostly limited or, you know, we don't really see? What are your thoughts?
I don't want to come off like super negative because I love loads of Magic sets, but Ixalan is not one of them.
Okay. And that's fine. So why is that?
Well, the draft format is not something that is, let's say, one of their best. Mm-hmm. If people like it, it's fine, but it feels very linear a lot of time, especially it doesn't have so much repeat value as certain other draft formats were.
Okay.
But for Standard as well, like the energy is maybe not so much a fault of Ixalan. I think more like the energy mechanic and the cards that they printed for it has been so powerful over the last year of Standard already. Because if you think about it, almost all the decks during the whole season have been playing the same shell. Huh. First you had Copycat combo that played the Teemer shell with World of Virtuoso, Rogue Refiners, Servitor to Conduits, and Harness Lightnings. Well, the same has been played in after that in the Marvel decks. They played the same core, and now the Teemer Energy decks are playing exactly the same core again. So, and I don't think the power level of Ixalan can fight by itself that the energy mechanics power level.
Hmm.
So that's why I think a lot of things that they have tried, like Dinosaurs now, it's just not really a deck.
Yeah, that's a good point, because energy and its associated cards are so impactful and so strong that it's just like, why switch, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. And, man, I had something else, and I was listening to you, and I totally forgot what I was going to say. okay, so we have the Pro Tour, not a lot of impact. Yes. So you said that the draft format, while it's not their best, there's not a lot of repeat to it. It's very linear is what you said. So what do you mean by that? What have you seen working and not working in draft?
When you have tribal draft archetypes, which is like this is of a draft format, but this is like half tribal format. What you get is where blue cards for me are maybe completely different evaluation than blue cards for you. If I'm drafting Merfolk and, for example, you're drafting Pirates with Treasures, you're not interested in a 2-1 that gets flying when I have another Merfolk. Or you're not really interested in, let's say, a Merfolk that, of a creature that has a Merfolk as its type outside of its relevant power level or its power level already. So you just pick up completely different cards from each other. And that's why you can draft same colors next to each other. But it can also happen that if you are together with two other people in a draft on a certain archetype, you just don't have a deck. Hmm. You really have to then switch earlier and see it in the draft that you have to switch. Because if three people are drafting Merfolk in the deck, well, in the pot, none of the three will likely win the draft.
Yeah. So it sounds like almost like a two-edged sword there. Because at first I'm like, well, you know, that sounds good. If I'm going for different blue cards and you're going for different blue cards and, you know, we could still make it work, for example. But then obviously the flip side is, if two or more people are going for the same archetype, then all players are kind of, you know, up the creek without a paddle.
Hmm. So you do quite a lot of searching in the draft to see what is open. But then there's also an issue is that there's only so many limited cards that are good for these tribal decks, let's say vampires or merfolk. So there are boosters being opened with literally zero good cards for your deck.
Oh.
So it's much harder to read the draft because you might take a good Merfolk, then you take another good Merfolk, then you see no Merfolk or anything good to your deck, then you see again nothing that's good to your deck. You think, okay, I will switch off on Merfolk, and then maybe pick 6 and pick 7, suddenly you have good Merfolk cards because they are all over the dead pack and nobody picked them up.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, and so the searching is very, very difficult, I think, in a tribal deck. And the ceiling is much higher, but the floor is much lower as well for your decks.
Got it. What's been working for you for in limited? Is there an archetype that you prefer, or what's your limited experience in Ixalan been?
Yeah, I think if Merfolk is open, Merfolk is just the most powerful draft archetype. Just has the most raw power level. But apart from that, there are definitely a lot of different things you can do. You can draft, let's say, the tribes, but you can also draft a white-blue flyers deck where you play the crappy 1-7. I don't know his name. Yeah. There's a 1-7 for 4 mana. He's really good at holding the fort when you're attacking with a 3-4 dinosaur in the air. So like you can also draft decks if those decks come not together. So there's more at this format than I thought at first glance, because at the beginning I really disliked it. Mm-hmm. It grew on me, but it's still not in my top 10 favorite drafts for sure.
Okay, very neat. So as you've picked up the tempo, I guess, of your Magic playing this year, and it paid off for you, what has been the biggest mistake that you see players make?
Maybe I can reflect this question to myself. What is the mistake that I make, that I see myself make a lot, and I try to work on? Because I think there's also maybe loads of other people who make a similar mistake. That is, I feel that my strategic game plan is quite solid, but my technical game plan, that is something that I have to work on. And somebody who has normally a relatively short attention span for things, and somebody who's quite extrovert instead of like introvert as a character, it's just very hard for me to keep following the precise procedures of every step. I'm not saying that I'm skipping corners or whatever. It's just like there's so often that it would happen to me that I suddenly forget a Dark Confidence trigger, or where I see that it happened to me earlier today. I was playing the Absent Tokens deck. And I played, I had this Legion's Landing on hand, and I just attacked first, and then I thought, oh, I have to play the Legion's Landing, because then I wanted to flip, not so much for making the token, but then I had the extra mana to play Anointed Procession. And these lines, which are just like, they're not things that I don't know or don't see, but then I just, because I go too fast or I go like in the flow of the game.
Right.
I just skip it and I lose great value. I lost this match because I didn't have that mana that game. So like this can severely punish you as a player. And this happens to me. And I think it also happens to a lot of other players. Because I've seen great players punt at certain stupid things. And where if you are a bystander, you think like, how don't you see that?
Yeah. So what are you going to do and what can players do to get better at their technical gameplay? So first, you know, you recognize it, so that's good. But what's the next step? How do you improve?
What I have been doing is slow myself down. Okay. Now, a lot of my Axion teammates make fun of me now that I'm a super slow player. But I just try to slow myself down, because if I just make stuff because I feel they're good, but not so much think over the consequences, you might miss things like this, which can cost you games. Yeah. So take your time, play at your own pace, but sometimes just take a point and think for a second. It's like, okay, what do I really want to achieve here? Instead of doing it, and then it's like, oh yeah, I could have done this too.
I like that. So slow down, take a little bit more time to consider the lines and the options. And I think that's really smart, because I think a lot of players, like you said, struggle with the same thing. Their technical gameplay needs some work, and giving themselves a few extra seconds per turn or per play to consider what to do, I think would be, you know, highly beneficial. So yeah, that's really neat. Good stuff. Yeah, well, I love this. I love having past guests back on the show, catching up, seeing what they're up to. And you've had a fantastic season, all the way up to gold and the English national champion. That's, you know, fantastic. So you mentioned some of the events we have coming up. You know, the Team GP, obviously this coming Pro Tour, then the World Magic Cup. So that's gonna be great. We wish you the best of luck in those. Do you have any words of wisdom, any parting pieces of guidance you want to share with us as we kind of pull into the home stretch here?
And this is just something that I see from some newer of my friends, because I introduced a couple, just let's say friends that I met via to Magic, and I see that a lot of people are sometimes hesitant making the next step. It can be going to your first GP. It can also be as small as going to your first FNM. The advice I would like to give to people is like, there's really no reason to be afraid of anything like this. The only way that you get yourself better is by playing better competition and learn from the better competition. So always when you feel you might not be ready for the next step and that you will get your ass kicked, so-called, at that event, I would advise still play it, because you will learn so much, and maybe in a year you're the one who does the ass kicking at that event.
I totally agree. Just go. I always tell people that, especially I see it the most with the GP, like you said. I'm not ready to go to a GP. Well, you're never going to be ready unless you go, you know, and it's just one of those things that, like you said, you might not start off the best, but, you know, as you continue going and putting yourself in this situation, you get more comfortable in that environment. And, you know, that first time, go with people, right? Like, you know, as you play Magic, you're going to find people who, you know, are at all levels, and I guarantee you, you'll find people who are doing that next step, whatever it is, whether it's FNM or PPTQs or Grand Prix. Go with them. You know, it's always more fun to do Magic with, you know, friends, with people who, you know, you want to do well, so just hook up with them and go, and then you'll have a social group that you can hang out with and talk with, and then you'll be able to go to the event. So totally agree, Niels. That's great advice. So I really love that. And I want to remind the prodigies out there that if you want to connect with Niels, you can do so on Twitter. He's at Niels Mole. And just look him up there and say thanks for being on the show. Wish him luck. He has a lot of cool stuff coming up. And Niels, I want to thank you. Thank you so much for your time, for coming back on the show. It's been, you know, a lot of fun to catch up and to hear what you've been up to. And I, like I said, love it when past guests do well. Looking forward to you continuing that. And here's to hoping that England places well in the World Magic Cup.
Thank you very much, Sean. Yeah, I hope so too.
So there you have it, Niels Mole. Thank you so much for coming back onto the show. I love having return guests, repeat visitors over here. Prodigies, you can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/NielsMole2, the number 2. Obviously, his first show notes will be just under his name, and you can find his favorite card, his favorite set, his origin story, all that stuff. And then today we talked about what we talked about, you know, what he's been up to since his last appearance on the show, specifically how he did, you know, at Nationals and whatnot. So congrats, Niels, and thank you so much for coming on to the show. Prodigy's Niels Molle 2 is where you can find his show notes. In closing out, I want to say thank you again to the patrons. Recognize them for their contributions to the show. They make it all possible. And Paragon City Games as well. Thank you so much for your support. mtgpro2.com/Patreon is where you can go to choose to give back if you have found any value in the show. If that's in your alley, then please feel free to do so. And ParagonCityGames.com is where you can check out what they have going on there. So stay tuned for the Pro Tour this weekend. Should be a lot of fun. Can't wait for that. And until the next episode, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.